So they'll focus on the clouds. He's coming in the clouds. And they'll say, that sounds like God judging Egypt in Isaiah 19, verse 1. Cloud imagery. And they'll make a big issue of the fact that Revelation 1, 7 says he was pierced. And they'll say, who pierced the Jewish nation? It was the Jewish people. Now, the last time I checked, Jesus died for who? The world. We all put him to death. But these folks want to blame everything on the Jewish nation. They pierced him, and so that's why the judgment of AD 70 took place. They'll focus on the expression tribes of Israel, and then they'll focus on the expression earth, and they'll try to argue that earth, the Greek word there, can actually mean land. And so it's speaking of God's judgment on the land of Israel. So let me give you the response to that. How would we respond to their use of Revelation 1 and verse 7? Well, the easiest way to refute it is to look at the whole expression, all the tribes of the earth. When you see that expression used over and over again in the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament, it does not just refer to the land of Israel. It doesn't just refer to the tribes of Israel. It refers to everyone on planet Earth. For example, in Genesis 12 and verse 3, God said that He would bless Abraham, and through Abraham, who would be blessed? All the tribes of the earth. That would include who? That would include everybody. Now, what about this word earth here? Does earth, the Greek word ge, does that mean the land of Israel? Not necessarily. What does Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1 say? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. When God created the heavens and the earth, did He just create the land of Israel? No, He didn't. He created the entire world. So this expression earth can have a global meaning depending on its use in its context. So I don't agree at all with how they're handling Revelation chapter 1 and verse 7. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 7 is not speaking of God's judgment on Jerusalem in AD 70. It's speaking of His soon return to judge all of planet Earth. Let me take you, if I could, to a fourth issue. And this has to do with the relevance to the seven churches. The preterist makes a big deal of the fact that the book of Revelation was written to the seven churches of Asia Minor. And what they'll argue is simply this. How could the book of Revelation be a prophecy about the distant future that wouldn't be fulfilled for another 2,000 years or more when the letter was aimed at seven real churches in Asia Minor? The preterist goes so far as to say that God, and according to our interpretation, is engaging in a cruel mockery of these churches. How could you give a church struggling in the first century hope by telling them that the prophecies of the book of Revelation wouldn't be fulfilled for another 2,000 years or more? And the answer to that is simply this. As you go through the Old Testament prophets, isn't it common for the Old Testament prophets to comfort God's people in the present by giving them a prophecy that is yet fulfilled in the distant future? For example, Isaiah 53, we know that prophecy, don't we? About the coming of Jesus Christ. Isaiah gave us that prophecy in the 7th century. When was that prophecy fulfilled? Not in Isaiah's lifetime, but 700 years down the road. So it's very common for prophets in the Old Testament and John in the book of Revelation to comfort people in the present by giving them a distant, futuristic vision that's yet to be fulfilled in the end time. Let me take you to a fifth issue that they use. And let's go over to Revelation 5 just for a minute. Revelation chapter 5 talks about a seven-sealed scroll. And it speaks of Jesus Christ in heaven holding this seven-sealed scroll. And if you look at Revelation chapter 5 in verse 1, it says, I saw at the right hand of him who sat on the throne a book written inside and on the back, sealed up with seven seals. And if you go over to Revelation 6, verses 1 and 2, it says, Then I saw the Lamb broke one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the living creatures saying with a loud voice of thunder, Come. So you have this seven-sealed scroll, and every time Jesus breaks a seal on the scroll, a judgment comes to the earth. Now, what is that seven-sealed scroll exactly? The preterist would say that the seven-seal scroll is God's divorce decree. This is when God permanently divorced the nation of Israel. Now, do we interpret the seven-sealed scroll that way? No, of course you can't interpret that way, because how could God divorce Israel, His covenanted nation? The proper understanding of the seven-sealed scroll is its discipline that God is bringing upon Israel and the world, with the intent of doing what? Not divorcing Israel, but what? Restoring her to faith. So the seven-sealed scroll is not a divorce decree. The seven-sealed scroll basically is a form of discipline that God is going to put the nation through in the events of the tribulation period. But the end result is Israel will be in faith at the end of that time period. The preterist likes to make a big deal about the fact that the same scroll language is used in the book of Ezekiel, chapters 2 and 3. Remember, Ezekiel was told to consume the scroll? And it tasted, although it was judgment, it tasted as honey, because it was still God's word. And the preterist says, look, when Ezekiel opened the scroll, God brought judgment upon the nation of Israel through the Babylonian captivity. When Jesus opens the scroll, God is bringing judgment upon the nation of Israel and divorcing her. But you know what? I think they need to read the rest of the book of Ezekiel. The rest of the book of Ezekiel gets beyond, as I'll be showing you this afternoon, gets beyond mere discipline of Israel, and you get to the end of the book of Ezekiel, and what do you have? Her restoration. So what you find with these preterists is they'll quote a part of the book that fits their theology, and they'll ignore the whole thrust of the book. How in the world could God divorce Israel when Israel has what's called the Abrahamic covenant? The Abrahamic covenant, is it conditional or unconditional? It's unconditional. Meaning that the fulfillment of the promises in the Abrahamic covenant rests completely on whose shoulders? Rests completely on God's shoulders. And that's the whole significance of God taking the severed animal pieces. And you could read about this in Genesis 15, arranging them in two parallel rows. And what happened in that day when you entered into a covenant with somebody is the parties to the covenant passed through the severed animal pieces. And they were saying to themselves, look, if I disavow or don't do what I promised to do under the terms of the covenant, then let me be torn asunder as these animals have been torn asunder. Do you remember what God did with Abraham? Put him to sleep. And God alone, as represented by the oven and the torch, passed through the animal pieces. And what that indicates is God is saying that this covenant, Abrahamic covenant, rests completely upon my shoulders. It doesn't rest upon the performance of man. And if I don't do exactly what I've said, I've promised and covenanted to do for the nation of Israel, God is saying, let me be torn asunder as these animals have been torn asunder. That is Israel's covenantal structure. Do we see that? And if that's true, how could you ever reach a point in history where God divorces Israel? It's an impossibility. This is why the book of Jeremiah, chapter 31 and verses 35 through 37, says, as long as there's sun, moon, and stars, Israel will always be a nation before me. You cannot cut Israel out of your theology. Why is that? Because of her covenant with God, not a covenant she made with God, but a covenant that God made with her. So that's how and why it's impossible to interpret the seven sealed scroll in Revelation 5 as some sort of divorce decree. So regarding the seven sealed scroll, preterists say it's a divorce decree. We say it's not a divorce decree. We say it's a form of discipline that God brings the nation through, but the end product is not her divorce. The end product is her restoration.